Well, hey, church leaders, welcome to the Slingshot Group podcast. I'm your host, Tim Foote, CEO of Slingshot Group, where we build remarkable teams through staffing and coaching. And on today's show, I'm joined by Todd Bolsinger. He's a pastor, educator, speaker, and accomplished author. Many of you will know his book, Canoeing the Mountains, and there's many other great writings that really resource us for leading through this cultural moment. And you might say, well, what cultural moment? How does he know my cultural moment? Well, I would say any cultural moment, because all these moments require change. And Todd's all about how to lead and adapt through change. This is a conversation you need to hear, and you might be surprised by it. So let's go. Todd, great to have you on the Slingshot Group podcast. And as I just mentioned, you are an amazing resource to so many leaders. Many already know of your work that are listening today, I'm sure. But in helping us lead through this cultural moment, and some may ask, what cultural moment? And I would say any cultural moment, because one thing we can be sure of is change. And you've authored many books. Canoeing the Mountains is the one that always comes to mind first, because it has been such an amazing resource for leaders and churches. Let's start by the inspiration behind the book.
Well, it was my own experience of so I was leading a church in South Orange County that I loved. It was going, all of the numbers were going up and to the right, you know, nothing spectacular, wasn't getting anybody's attention, but it was healthy and going well. And then all of a sudden one day I realized while the metrics were going up, the morale was going down. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't figure it out. And that led me on a journey of having to think about when the world starts to change and you're not even sure what's happened. How do you begin to change the way you lead? And that, so Canoeing the Mountains became the metaphor of using the Lewis and Clark expedition, where they stumbled on the Rocky Mountains. Just imagine an entire nation of people, the United States of America, that didn't know the Rocky Mountains existed.
Well, and Todd, right? I'm located in the Denver area. I look at them right every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's so interesting is I had somebody say to me once, Denver, Colorado was founded by people who made their way all the way across all the dangers of the Great Plains and woke up one morning and went, right here. We're stopping right here.
I agree.
And I think that's where the church is today. I think a whole bunch of folks are going, either we need to stop right here or we need to go back. We need to go back. Yeah. I believe the Spirit of God is pulling us forward. And that means we're going to have to learn new terrain. And so Canoeing the Mountains is all about the fact that Lewis and Clark was a water route. They were trying to find a water route. They were canoers who confronted mountains. And the question is, how do you canoe over mountains? And the answer is, you don't. You learn to lead all over again.
I love, Todd, what you said. Once we realize is that the losses won't kill us, they can teach us. Talk about personally how you realize this.
Well, you know, so I'm going to be 60 in a couple of months, and I'm
part of that. That doesn't sound old to me. That's what you're
yeah, really, exactly. Well, but I'm part of that generation, like many, that believe that if you just were faithful and you're trustworthy and you were faithful to the gospel and you were really competent at casting vision and preaching, people would follow you. And so I became a really committed person to teaching and preaching well, and believing that teaching and preaching would be leadership, and that's all we needed to do. And we started realizing that we live in actually in a really different world where you can be really faithful and really trustworthy, and people will still not be transformed, and they will still not want to follow you necessarily. So one of the hardest parts for me was to realize that the way I had learned to lead was inadequate for this moment. And that meant I had to lose especially my sense of personal credibility, that I just thought I was an expert that had it worked out, and I had to become a learner. And that experience of going from being an expert to being a learner was a kind of loss, and many other followed from there.
That's so insightful, because as leaders, so often we think that certain things are going to be the end of it all, and they become these giants on the battlefield. and we get so overwhelmed by them. You know, it's, I'm always a proponent of therapy and leadership, Todd. I'm sure you are too. We've always got to be processing our stuff. And therapists will always say, play out the worst case scenario. And it takes the power out of it. It takes, it shrinks the giants. But when you wrote this book in, released in 2015, right? When you released the book, you had no idea where we were headed as a planet into COVID, and that we as church leaders would have to canoe some unprecedented mountains together in completely unfamiliar terrain. What I'm fascinated by right now is that what we're seeing in a post-pandemic environment, Todd, is that many of the churches are trying to return back to familiar terrain or familiar waters, back to how we used to do it. Now, there are some big challenges and things I wouldn't want to do over again, but there are some valuable lessons learned that I would think should shape where we go in the future. But we feel like we're seeing many churches feeling like they need to pull back to what they knew and were comfortable with before. Are you seeing this, and what are your thoughts about that?
Well, okay, first of all, yes, we're seeing it everywhere, and it's because it's completely normal. It's what humans do, right? So just, I always tell people, remember that the word familiar and family are the same root word. So when you get put and thrust into an unfamiliar experience, you feel unfamilied. Like, you don't just feel disoriented, you feel abandoned, you feel like you're orphaned. And, you know, I said, it's not the, I served really close to Disneyland, right? It's not the happiest place on earth if a little boy loses mommy and daddy in Main Street. They got to run home to mama before they can enjoy the Magic Kingdom. And for so many of our church leaders and our church and our congregations, there's this belief that if we can return back to a normal, we can go back to something that we know that is familiar, well, then we can move forward. And the truth is, there is no turning back. I mean, this is the part that has just been so disruptive. In 2015, I was writing about the huge disruption that was happening in the church over Christendom, that after centuries and centuries of Christianity being in the center of culture in the West, it was now on the margins. And that changed in one generation. And that was rapid, like one generation after centuries of the same kind of cultural experience. Well, then on March 13, 2020, the whole world got disrupted in one day. And all of a sudden, every church was having to ask, if this is the world we're in, how are we going to lead into this world that is really different and really been disrupted? And that's our work. Our work is helping faith leaders thrive as change leaders, because we live in a time of unprecedented change. And I don't have to, I can talk about that in specifics, but I think all of us understand that.
Think of the teachings of Jesus, Todd, and how when he taught, his words carried multi-layered meaning. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to think back, you writing this book about one thing, and yet when COVID unfolded, you must have gone, oh, Lord, you had bigger purposes for this. How is that?
Well, there's no way you can predict that. I mean, that's, and there's no way. I mean, so remember back in the 90s, you know, Wayne Gretzky's famous phrase, you know, the good person is, you know, to be successful, you got to skate to where the puck is going, right? Got to anticipate the future. And I was on Kerry Newhoff's broadcast and joked with him about the fact that he's the kind of guy who's always talking about where the future is. I actually believe that you can't predict the future, that we now live in a game with 14 pucks and there's no way to know which way they're going. And so you've got to develop a different kind of leadership that's not based on being able to see the future, predict the future, know what's coming. It's actually a way of learning how to adapt as you go. I say, you don't predict, you prototype, you experiment, you learn. And that's a totally different experience, and one that even as an author and as a leader, I experienced and had to live through many times.
I love that reminder that we're experimenting, we're learning. It's interesting. So often, you know, I've been challenged by this lately. So often we get confused and think our mission is growing the church. Our mission is expanding our territory. Our mission is aligning with God's purposes and building his his kingdom. And when we abide with him and when we continue to pray the prayer, Lord, help me align with what you're doing, that's when he starts to do the amazing stuff. But let's go back to this experimenting and this learning. Let's zoom in on this concept of adaptive leadership. This seems to be a huge thread in all of your writing right now, Todd. So how would you define adaptive leadership and the role it should play for church leaders listening today?
So adaptive leadership comes out of Harvard University. A guy named two people, Marty Linsky and Ronald Heifetz, use that kind of leadership, use that description to talk about how you lead in a disruptive world. So the whole idea of adaptive leadership is when a healthy organism, a healthy body, so this is works great for the Christians. We think of the church as the body of Christ. When it has to adapt to a changing environment that is oftentimes very disruptive, it does so by becoming the healthiest, best version of itself. But that means it has to leave some things behind. So adaptive leadership is always about learning. It starts the minute when somebody asks you, so Pastor, what are we going to do? And you have to answer, I don't know, which is a hard moment. I mean, I work at a seminary. Everybody who comes to a seminary, somebody said to them, you're the best Christian I know. You should go pro. And they go off to professional Christian school and they come out with a master of divinity. Does that sound like a superhero or what? And people expect us to have answers. But if we live in this world where it is so deeply disruptive, there are no answers. We don't know what to do. So we're going to have to learn our way forward and we're going to have to let go of things that brought us here. So if you're Lewis and Clark looking for a water route and you brought canoes and you brought canoers and you brought river guides and all of a sudden you face the Rocky Mountains and you have to go back and tell them, hey, those canoes you built with your bare hands, we're going to have to burn them for firewood because we're going to be walking through the mountains. And mountains that are bigger than anything you've ever imagined. They're bigger than anything you've ever understood. That's the future. So do you want to come forward or not? And adaptive leadership teaches healthy organizations how to wisely adapt. So with figuring out which values and behaviors and attitudes you hold on to and which ones you have to be willing to let go so that you can fulfill the mission. And so in June, I've got four little books coming out that are all on the four mistakes that good leaders make. And one of them is called How Not to Waste a Crisis. And it's about trying harder of your old things instead of learning all over again. And another one's called The Mission Always Wins. And because one of the mistakes people make is they think the leader has to win or the donors have to win or the stakeholders have to win or the new people have to win. And the answer is the mission always wins. And so there's you know, two more.
Yeah, I can't wait for those to be released. And I want to talk a little bit more about that before we finish today. And I think that might be another trip back to the Slingshot Group podcast when that comes out, Todd.
Glad to do it.
When you talk about leaving things behind, the scripture that automatically came into my mind was deny yourself, take up your cross and follow. And the powerful words, I don't know. I mean, they're so powerful when you think about those, but it's a journey of dying to yourself, isn't it, Todd? Talk about the grief that's associated with the stuff you got to leave behind, the canoes you got to.
Yeah. So I think about this as when Jesus looked at them and said, you have to be willing to deny yourself and take up your cross. It wasn't the first time he told them to leave something behind. Most, you know, remember the story of James and John who had to leave their father in the boat and drop their nets. And there's something about leaving your father in the boats, leaving your business behind, drop your nets, come with me, and you have a whole new mission in life. You're going to fish for people and not for fish. That is radically transformative, that I believe was the first of many steps preparing them for what is the pinnacle statement of Jesus's call to them, which is they're not going to be a successful military overthrowing, you know, crusading group that takes over the Roman Empire. They are going to be people who lose their life for the sake of the kingdom of God and transform the world as they do so.
You alluded to seminary and pro-Christians, Captain Christians graduating from seminary. Some church leaders have gone through seminary training. Others have not. And whether you have or you have not, many church leaders feel deeply unprepared for much of what they do week in, week out, leading the church. You know, I think of our friend Rich Birch, who has the Unseminary podcast, which is aimed at the things that they don't teach you in Bible school. I think about being bivocational back in Australia and how there is so much I learnt in the secular space that actually best prepared me for the sacred space, for want of a better title. But talk about what leaders are not taught that they're learning the hard way.
Mm-hmm. Well, this canoeing the mountains and my whole journey started when I was working with pastors who said to me, I'm a Presbyterian, so we have a high value of education, and I have a master's degree and a PhD even, right? But I had so many leaders who had high education say, seminary didn't prepare me for this moment. And so I really do believe in a well-trained and well-educated and well-equipped clergy. And sometimes that is formal education and sometimes it's not. I'm working with one of the largest denominations in the world right now that doesn't require formal seminary education. And one of the things we're talking about is how their denomination can become more and more educated and well-trained and well-formed at a culture that doesn't have the same value of higher education or the capacity for people to afford it. And so what's really important is to think about formation of people for the task they have been given, for the mission they have been given, and what does that require? And I believe that is, in many times, it's more training and more education. I would say to people, your goal isn't to try harder, it's to train more. It's to train differently. And training and equipping and forming is really important. And that happens in lots of different ways.
That's really helpful to hear, to open our minds, especially in the recruitment and staffing space, when often we get connected to the wrong things to validate the leader that we need. That's probably a whole other conversation. But Todd, it's interesting you say that leaders say to you, and I've heard it too, seminary didn't prepare me for this. Often it's God's purposes that we're not prepared for certain things, so that we do say those powerful words, I don't know. And we can develop and grow and refine desperate dependence on Jesus so that we go in different directions. But are there any other practical steps that pastors and church leaders can do you feel, to better prepare themselves for the realities of leading in the church?
Yeah. So after writing Canoeing the Mountains, I found that whenever I would go speak to places, and I've probably now traveled at almost a million miles in talking to people about the Canoeing the Mountains. Lots of different continents, lots of different places. Almost every place people came to me and said, hey, the chapter on sabotage, that I've never heard before. And so I wrote a book called Tempered Resilience, which is really about how you are formed in the crucible of leadership. So one of the most important things you have to teach people is you don't learn to be a leader by writing a paper. I mean, it's like I say, I'll work with young leaders and I will tell them, hey, leadership is really hard because you have to disappoint people. And older leaders will laugh and go, of course. And younger leaders will write it down and think it's going to be on the test, right? And what you're having to teach people is one of the most important things is leadership is learned in the leading. And you usually become a leader right after you were good at something that was not leading, right? You become a worship leader because you were a good musician and singer and had a heart for God. You become a pastor because you're a good preacher and you're good at 3 points in a poem, as if that's the same thing as working with a people, right? And so when you get step into a leadership experience and you feel overwhelmed, actually, your education starts in a new way at that moment. And so most of our work is with people at that moment, including even the work I do now at the seminary. I work entirely in the Doctor of Ministry program, working with mid-career people who are trying to become good, solid, adaptive leaders for changing denominations and changing churches. And, it's all real-time learning while you're doing it. It's learning how to lead on the job.
I'll pull on a thread there, Todd. You talked about you end up leading something that because you were good at it, but you weren't leading it. And I want to touch on your thoughts around the Peter principle.
Yeah.
And we may even need to define that for some leaders listening today. So could you define it and then give me your thoughts on it based on what you just said?
Yeah, well, the Peter principle is a principle that is widely known as you tend to get promoted to the level of your incompetence. Like you keep going up until you're incompetent. And I think the Peter principle is built on the notion that I believe that what got me here is going to take me there. So what you forget is that when you go into a new leadership situation, you actually have to be an expert learner. You have to step in and say, okay, I'm in a brand new space and I'm going to have to learn what this is. So I really do remember what it was like being a pretty good teacher and a pretty good speaker who all of a sudden had a staff to supervise. And what I couldn't do is just talk at them. I couldn't give them inspiring Bible studies and send them out. I actually had to listen to them, train them, work with them, coach them. Think of all these different verbs. Somebody asked me on a podcast last week, if you could say anything to the young leader, Todd, what would you say to them? And I would say, oh, listen way more than you speak. Like learning listening skills is really hard for good talkers. And the Peter principle is when you keep trying to apply the old tool to the new environment. It's where you keep paddling the canoe, even though you've run out of water, until you're burned out and you blow out your rotator cuff, right?
I think you just gave me the answer, but speak to the leader right now who knows all about the Peter principle and being promoted into your incompetence, I guess, or out of your competence. Yep. And often when you're faced with the fork in the road and change, and you don't know what to do, and you maybe even too afraid to admit it, but in the back of your mind, that voice is saying to you, ah, this is a Peter principle. You've been promoted into your incompetence. You don't know what to do. You shouldn't be. It's the imposter syndrome now. Speak to the leader who's at that spot.
Yeah. I would say that as soon as you acknowledge that you don't know what to do, you're in a whole new day. Like the clouds begin to shape. To begin to lift. And here's why. At this moment, you can ask yourself, do I really want to do this? I mean, do I really, really? I mean, so many of us keep being promoted because it's a sign of success, or we get paid more, or we get a better office or heavier furniture or whatever. Is it really give me joy? Is this really how I want to spend my life? I mean, there's a moment where you can come back and say, what I want to do is work on the thing I'm most called to work on. And if the answer is, yeah, this is a calling. I need to step into this space and I don't know what to do. Well, then the answer is become an expert learner. Start learning all over again and start stepping into this space as the opportunity for you to keep learning and to grow as a leader. And it doesn't mean if you go back to the other space that you won't grow. It just means that you'll be able to grow in a different way. And those are both equally valid, just equally important. It's all about the call of God in your life.
So, Todd, many of the leaders we work with at Slingshot Group are driven leaders, whatever it is, hiring, firing, vision, new ministries, and so on. They want to move, and they want to move fast. Yet the teams we often lead and the churches we shepherd are slow and resistant to change. I mean, you're no stranger to this scenario. So we all know change is often necessary. How can leaders lead their teams and churches through change in a healthy way?
Well, one of the four books, one of the mistakes good leaders make is they believe that when they get resistance, when you get pushback, well, then you need to push back against the pushback. You need to hold firm. You need to like hold their feet to the fire. You need to drive forward. You know, you need to call people forward. The truth is, when you get pushback, what you're actually getting is the opportunity to give people a chance to buy in. So if you can learn to pull people by rather than push back against them, you can get them going in the same direction. But it means that you actually have to lead differently. You have to take them through their transformation. So whenever I define leadership, my definition is leadership is energizing a community of people toward their own transformation so they can accomplish a mission. So for me, you're in the leadership space when you're being transformed and when you're helping other people be transformed. If not, then you're in the management space. And that's really important. If it's just about organizing, getting the spreadsheets right, getting the markers right, getting all of the goals right, getting the budget right, getting the metrics right, those are really important. I don't think management is less than leadership, but it's a different thing. So for so many leaders, what they do is they get to that space and their egos get involved. And when they get resistance, instead of looking at that as an opportunity to take people through a journey of transformation, they just get brutal and they get hard and they push back and it's my way or the highway. And pretty soon you've got bullies and pretty soon you've got people on podcasts about how churches blow up.
Yeah, unfortunately. Todd, give us some practical steps on how to pull forward rather than push back.
Well, one of the things that you do to pull people forward is you get really, really clear that the mission is bigger than me. Like we're both here because we're called to something bigger than ourselves. You get really, really clear on that. When you get resistance, if it becomes a personality thing, then it will inevitably become a power thing, right? So power's not wrong. Power keeps evil from happening, right? So power is helpful to stop what is dysfunctional, but power doesn't bring transformation. You actually have people have to want to be changed. So the mission has to be bigger than us. So we often talk a lot about getting people really clear on a mission that is bigger than any of us, including the leader. One of the most interesting parts about our work, we lead churches and organizations. And right now we're doing a strategic plan for a major university and we're working with two different denominations and we do these massive work. And almost every time the person at the top of the org chart has to also have a gut check. Is this my vision or is this the vision of the Lord, the mission that we're called to do that I will steward until I need to step out? And sometimes we work them through a strategic plan and the leader's done a perfect job of leading them through to their new future and then knows, and I'm not the person to lead it. And that's really wise.
Yeah. And Todd, that comes back to alignment with Jesus's purposes and building his kingdom rather than the mission being the organization. I think that's where we become the lead. So you talked about transformation, Todd, and with transformation becomes behavioral change. And in a time where church teams are facing uncharted territory, continuing to face uncharted territory and forced to lead through a lot of change, what are the behaviors that have to change for church leaders to build remarkable and healthy church teams?
Well, so there's two things that I always say to people. The goal is transformation. That's ultimately the goal. It is for the kingdoms of this world to become the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever and ever, right? It's the goal is transformation. There is no transformation without trust. So the first thing is really about trust. We talk a lot with emerging leaders is your developmental path is to become a trustworthy leader. That means you have credibility, so you have competence to do the things you're asked to do. You handle the scriptures well. You handle people's souls well. You handle meetings well. You handle money well, right? You're competent, but you're also congruent. You're a person of character. You're the same person showing up no matter where people run into you and they trust you. There is no transformation without trust. But trust is not transformation. And one of the mistakes of an older generation of leaders is as long as the trust is high and everybody trusts me, well, then I can say where we're going and they'll follow. And the answer is they'll follow you and they will not be transformed, which is one of the things we're seeing right now in our culture. And we saw it during COVID. We have massive mega churches that culturally are following the world. And we saw this with every marker is exactly the same as the world. The amount of unchurched, the amount of people polarized by politics, the amount of people, you can have lots of people who trust you and they'll show up and they'll give you money and they'll align with you and be members of you and they're not being transformed. So there's no transformation without trust. But trust is not transformation. Transformation is taking people through a process where they're going to have to actually have to learn and let go and become a group of people who are able to live into and live out the mission of God in the world.
So I talk a bit about what you call, and you alluded to it before, what you call the pitfalls of sabotage and the danger, particularly the danger of protecting the status quo.
The status quo will not easily let go. It's just human nature. Like, the status quo is literally what I'm familiar with. And what most of us who get into any places of authority or leadership do is we build a world that we're comfortable with. Okay, now this is the world I'm comfortable with, which means that your entire congregation and the people who are with you are comfortable with it. Well, if all of a sudden you're in a changing world and you got to take them out of their comfort zone into something else, they resist. And what Ed Friedman, who was this Jewish rabbi who was genius a generation ago, said was preparing for sabotage is the most important aspect of leadership. The most important aspect. I said, which is why, of course, every seminary teaches a year on sabotage. No, they almost never mention it, right? Even in the school I serve, we never taught sabotage till some of us started saying, hey, we got to talk about this. Sabotage is not the bad things that evil people do. Sabotage is the human things that anxious people do. When people get anxious, they want the familiar and they want to go back to the status quo. And if you need an example of this, you see this right after the Red Sea, the greatest miracle in the Bible until the resurrection. 650,000 people saw God miraculously save them, destroy the Egyptian army, and set them free. And 6 weeks later, 6 weeks, it's actually in Exodus 16, it says 6 weeks later, they're saying, you know, slavery, they did kill our children, but we had leeks and onions and we had meals. Maybe we should go back. It's normal. It's natural. It's to be expected. And the single biggest work we have to work with leaders on is that resistance is normal. It's part and parcel of the leadership process. And it usually doesn't come until after you've won the vote that started the new initiative, after you've said, we're going to plant the church or start a new service or reach out to a new unreached group or, you know, what after everybody agreed we're going to do this, then you get sabotaged. And that's what just is the most soul-sucking thing to most leaders.
And how do we handle it?
Well, you handle it by, first of all, I mean, you have to have a conviction that the thing we're doing, you start with discernment. This, the thing we're doing really is the thing we're called to do. Like this, like God really did say, leave Egypt and go to the promised land. And yep, there's a wilderness. And you know what? We had no idea how long it was going to take us. The manager would tell you it takes about 6 weeks to get from the Red Sea to the promised land. The leader knows they need to be transformed and it's going to take 40 years. So once you have the conviction that this is what we're doing, even when the resistance comes, we are able to stay calm. You then have to stay, you just really have to be aware that this is not personal. I mean, it's really hard. People get mad at you. You have to be able to stay connected to the very people who are sabotaging you, which again is really hard. Everything within us wants to just throw them out, drop them in a ditch, run away from them, hope they go to another church, whatever. Stay fire connected. Them. Yeah, fire them, right? Yeah. And then stay the course. And that little mantra, start with conviction, stay calm, stay connected, stay the course, is an adaptation that I learned from the Lombard Mennonite Peace Center, who were people who were working around the world with folks who were trying to like bring transformation in, you know, war-torn countries and stuff like that.
So speak to the leader today who is in the middle of sabotage, who's in the middle of uncertainty, and everything within them, Todd, is telling them to be anxious and worry, not stay calm, and to move away from the people or the team members or volunteers or board members that are challenging them, but they need to connect to them. Speak to those leaders in the middle of it right now.
Well, the first thing I would say is, first of all, really do embrace that this is normal. Second, you were not trained to do this, so get help. Like there's nobody's asking you to do this alone. Matter of fact, the most dangerous thing is trying to do this alone. So even in tempered resilience, we talk a lot about the fact that the most important thing for a leader is to have enough relationships, partners and mentors and friends. Most leaders who are facing sabotage and burning out, they will talk about being deeply lonely. So it's normal. It's not entirely about you, and you can't do this alone. So get help and then learn how to lead through the sabotage, which, again, you've never had to do this before. So it is just, it's not about a deficit. It's about training. It's like learning how to do it.
Mm-hmm. And the next thing, Todd, that will often happen is questioning calling. What would you say?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, we question calling because some of us believe if I'm so called to this, then obviously God's going to bless it. And here's the weird part. Usually early on in the non-leadership moments of our lives, how people told you were called is because you were gifted. Oh my gosh, you're so gifted. And there was fruit and people said, you need to keep going. What's hard about the leadership space is that usually that means everything, all that credibility, all that trust, now you have to put on the line for the sake of a community's transformation. And at that moment you get resistance and that is just soul sucking, but that is normal. That's actually the work.
Yeah. Thanks for normalizing that for us today, Todd. And this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for the work and investment you've been making in churches, ministries, church leaders. We'd love to, as we close, hear what's next for you. When does your new Practicing Change series come out and how listeners can connect with what you're doing?
Yeah. So that series will come out in June of 2024. Four little books, each of them can be read on one plane flight. I mean, so they're intended to be. Each of them focuses on one of the most common mistakes that good leaders make. And they'll all be coming out in June of 2024. They were all a response to these kinds of questions that were asked for people who were trying to bring change. And then most of my work is found in my company at AE Sloan Leadership. And it's really, we work with faith leaders who are trying to thrive as change leaders. And some of the work I get to do at Fuller Seminary, where we do a lot of research on this. We've got cohorts for small churches who can't afford the consulting of a company. We've got just opportunities for people to connect with us. And even if you connect through my company website, if the best place for you is to get you to one of Fuller's web cohorts, we get you there. So.
That's great, Todd. One of the many things I love about you and your writings and your teaching is you have been there and you have done that. You've been in the trenches of local church ministry and you've led through change. And so I just want to say today as we close, Todd, thank you for staying aligned with the work that God created you to do and how you're investing in all of us. And thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What a great conversation with Todd. One of the things I loved about that is he reminded us that church ministry and leadership is messy. Leading through change is messy but necessary. And he normalized it for us. And he gave us some handles to hold on to keep leading forward, not pushing back, to care, to connect. So I encourage you to do those things in the coming weeks. If you enjoyed this conversation, please share it with another leader. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And remember, stay curious and reach for the remarkable.